Enough to get through the winter, Brad said. Kossoff's bearded face looked grim, but he asked, Is that the sense of the group? Do you believe we should help the aliens? No one replied. Brad saw that none of them wanted to be the first to answer. So he said, Yes. We should help them to survive, otherwise we'd be killing them. Steiner said, But a new generation will arise. The species will survive. How would you like it if you were forced to kill yourself after you've reproduced? Brad asked. That's what happens naturally, Steiner said. We're genetically programmed to die after we've reached sexual maturity. Perhaps so, said Chang in her soft, self-effacing tone. But human females live far beyond menopause. And human males? Someone asked. They can father children as long as they live, almost, Steiner said, sounding resentful. Felicia spoke up. Besides, we've worked for centuries to prolong our lifespans, to avoid death as long as we can, regardless of our reproductive capabilities. But we still die, said Steiner. Not willingly, Little John retorted. Enough, Kossoff barked. I want a show of hands. Shall we give the gamins enough technological help to assure that they will survive their winter? Brad shot his hand high in the air. Abbott raised his more slowly, followed by Steiner and Chang. One by one, each of the department heads raised his or her hand. Little John watched them, then finally joined in the consensus. Kossoff broke into a reluctant smile. What the hell, he said reluctantly as he raised his own hand. Might as well make it unanimous. Noriyoshi Yamagata studied the screen that displayed the results of Brad McDaniels's detailed physical examination. Miss nothing, he told himself as he sat at his desk, peering intently at the readouts. This young man has exposed himself to the environment of an alien planet. Yes, the planet is Earth-like, but it is not Earth. Biological theory stated that the microscopic alien equivalents of bacteria and viruses would not, could not attack earthly cells. They are alien, not adapted to feeding on the cells of terrestrial visitors. But that is theory, not actual experience, he knew. McDaniels has lived on that planet's surface for many days, breathed its air, exposed himself to its native pathogens. After several hours of intense scrutiny, Yamagata leaned back in his little swivel chair, almost satisfied. Almost. McDaniels appears to be in excellent health, he saw. A little underweight, but that is to be expected when his food intake was so restricted. There is no evidence of infection, not a trace of alien microbes invading his body, attacking his cells. Good news, he thought. Yet he felt uneasy. Tomorrow, a team of 20 men and women is going down to the surface of that alien world. Will the native biosphere be so benign with them? Or have I missed something? Something that might kill them all. All the available evidence pointed against that unhappy result. Still, Yamagata felt uneasy. All the available evidence might not be all the evidence that exists. Ground Team. With Felicia beside him, Brad stood in the afternoon sunlight, watching the construction robots putting together the prefabricated camp structures that would be their home while the team was on Gamma. The robots were humanoid in form, although most of them had forearms that could be fitted with human-like hands, pincer-like claws, or any number of specialized tools. Their faces had two electro-optical eyes, a set of environmental sensors where a human nose would be, and a speaker grill for a mouth. But they reminded Brad of oversized ants, not mechanical humans, tirelessly busy, assembling the single-story buildings with single-minded, automated efficiency. Living quarters, offices, laboratories, dining hall, communications center. Off to one side stood the beginnings of a garage. No more trudging out to the village on foot, Brad said to himself. I wonder what the gamins will think of our self-propelled ground cars. Turning to Felicia, he said, We can ride out to the village before the sun goes down. But the mission plan doesn't include visiting the village until our base is finished, she replied. Nodding, Brad said, The robots will finish the base whether we're here or not. I want to get back to the village, show them that we haven't forsaken them. You should get Dr. Littlejohn's approval, then. Grasping her wrist, Brad replied, Okay, let's go find him. Little John was in the room that would be his office. It looked bare, raw, new. But the anthropologist was already at his desk, reporting to Kossoff up in the orbiting starship. "Construction is proceeding on schedule. We'll sleep under the new roofs tonight and get down to work tomorrow." Standing in the office's doorway, Felicia and Brad saw Kossoff's three-dimensional image sitting behind his desk as usual. "Well, that's fine," said Kossoff. "Everything is on schedule, then." "Yes, it is," said Little John, with a satisfied smile. Brad held Felicia at the doorway. "Don't interrupt them," he whispered. As if he heard Brad's words, Little John's eyes flicked to the doorway, then returned their focus to Kossoff. "McDaniels is here now, Professor. He's just stepping into my office." With Felicia trailing behind him, Brad walked toward Little John's desk. Once he stepped into Kossoff's view, the professor said, "I suppose you're anxious to get back to your villagers?" "Yes, sir, I am. I've been away more than 2 days now. I don't want them to think that I've abandoned them." Unconsciously scratching at his beard, Kossoff said, "You've got to stop thinking of yourself as some kind of messiah, Brad." Astonished at the idea, Brad blurted, "Messiah? Me?" "Power corrupts," Kossoff warned. "Remember that." Shaking his head, Brad replied, "All I want to do is help those people. They need our help, thanks to your interfering with them." Brad held on to his swooping temper. "He doesn't understand," he told himself. "He just doesn't understand." "Sir, no one can unscramble an egg. We're down here to help the Gamins survive. That's what I intend to do." Kossoff muttered, "Just remember, you're the one who scrambled this particular egg in the first place. The responsibility for the alien's survival rests on your shoulders." Brad pressed his lips together and remained silent. Yet he thought, "The responsibility is mine. But will you let me have the authority I need to get the job done?" Once Little John ended his discussion with Kossoff and cut the connection, Brad told him that he wanted to visit the village before the sun went down. Glancing at his desktop digital clock display, the anthropologist said, "There's less than 3 hours of daylight left. We can make it to the village in 15 minutes or so in one of the ground cars." "We?" "Felicia and me." Little John asked, "Why the rush?" "As I said to Professor Kossoff, I don't want them to think I've abandoned them." Little John fiddled with the implements on his desktop. Stylus, notebook, keypad. At last he looked up at Brad and said, "Kossoff won't like it." Brad responded, "He put you in charge of the ground team. You don't have to ask his permission for every move we make." Little John let out an unhappy sigh, but he agreed. I suppose I don't." "Great, thanks." Raising a cautionary finger, Little John asked, "You intend to bring your wife with you?" "I want to show the Gamins that there are more of us come to help them. Besides," he added silently, "I want Felicia to see the village." Return. The ground car climbed the gently sloping hillside quite easily, its electric motor humming softly. Brad drove it manually, with Felicia sitting beside him. The car was open, roofless, although an invisible energy screen shielded its occupants from the weather and would enfold them in unyielding protection to keep them safe from injury in the case of a crash. The two rear seats were empty. As they neared the crest of the ridgeline, Brad said almost to himself, "Nearly there." Felicia glanced at him, then returned her gaze forward. Brad stopped the car just below the top of the ridge. "Let's go the rest of the way on foot," he said to Felicia as he got out of the car. "We can show them the buggy tomorrow." He came around the car as she got up from her seat and stood beside him. A half dozen steps, and they reached the crest. "There it is," he said. In the hollow below them sat the village, just as it had appeared when Brad had first seen it. Buildings arranged in a pair of circles, Gamins coming in from the fields, a few of them leading their six-legged draft animals, a gaggle clustered at the longhouse as usual. Almost in a whisper, Felicia said, "It looks peaceful." Brad nodded, took her hand, and started down the slope. "They all look alike," Felicia noted. "How can you tell them apart?" "Their body markings." "They're all naked?" Brad nodded. "They don't have any sex, no shame." "Like Adam and Eve before they ate the forbidden fruit?" "More or less," Brad said. One of the gamins shouted, "Look, it's Bird! And someone with him!" Felicia touched the earbud of her communication set, adjusting the volume. The gamins stood by the longhouse, staring as Brad and Felicia came down the hillside and approached them. "I'm going to introduce you as Phil," Brad told her. "That'll be easier for them to pronounce." She nodded, gazing fascinatedly at the tall, cone-headed aliens. Brad recognized Nx standing at the head of the crowd, and Ling right beside him. "Hello," he called. "I'm back." They were staring at Felicia. "This is Phil," Brad said as they stopped before the group.
"Phil,"
said Nx. The computer translator repeated the sound.
"Phil is very small," Ling said undiplomatically.
Brad knew that trying to explain sexual dimorphism would be useless to them. He said, "Not all of my people are as tall as I am."
"Her fur is longer than yours."
Striving to keep a straight face, Brad said, "Yes, that is so."
"Your people have many differences, Bird," Nx said.
"That's true," Brad admitted, realizing that the main differences between one gamin and another was the pattern of colored splotches on their bodies.
"Can Phil speak?" Ling asked.
"Yes, I can," said Felicia. "What is your name?"
"Ling." "I am Nx. I am the village's rememberer. You are welcome among us, Phil."
"Thank you. I am happy to meet you." Brad glanced up at the sky. Mithra was almost touching the hilltops. Shadows were stretching across the hollow. Brad started to say, "We have to return to our own village." The gamins seemed staggered.
"You are returning to your home in the sky?"
"No, no," Brad quickly reassured them. "My people are building a village where we can live while we show you how to build a new village for your new folk."
"And how to live through the winter," Ling added.
"Yes, that too," said Brad. "We'll return tomorrow with many more of our people."
"You can stay here with us, Bird and Fool," Nx offered.
"That's very generous of you," Brad replied. "But it will be better if we return to our own village. We'll be back tomorrow."
"If that is your wish."
The computer's translation could not convey moods or emotional shadings, but Brad thought he detected sorrow in Nx's words. "We'll return tomorrow," he promised. As Brad and Felicia trudged up the hillside toward their waiting car, she said, "They seem passive." He nodded. "Right. That's something we'll have to teach them about." "Look," said Felicia, as they rode down the hillside to the site of their base camp. "The whole camp is almost finished." Peering through the deepening shadows of twilight, Brad saw that most of the robots stood lined up to one side of the buildings, inert, their tasks finished. Cars trundled supplies from the shuttlecraft to the buildings. Lights shone through the windows. People moved back and forth. Somehow they seemed to Brad to be less purposeful, less intent than the tireless robots. In the distance, a trio of engineers was inspecting the damaged shuttlecraft that Brad had originally flown in on. Two robots stood behind them, unmoving, waiting for orders. He drove up to the building that housed the camp's offices and saw that Little John was standing in its doorway waiting for him. "You're right on time for dinner," Little John called as Brad turned off the buggy's engine. "How did it go?" Climbing out of the car, Brad reported, "They seemed happy to see us."
"I'll bet they were.